From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Heed this advice from first graders. If math scares you, just sing about it. We visit the young audience's Summer Arts and Learning Academy to discover how seven-year-olds tame tough equations through song. Plus, we meet pianist and composer Scott Patterson, who'll perform his future-focused compositions tonight at the Peel Center on a grand piano that's 140 years old. His commitment to his craft is matched by his goal of helping humanity aspire to greatness.
It's a human need to be able to think outside of your day-to-day, to be able to think of the future. And that is why we want to inspire ourselves and inspire our community and our country and our world to dream and to dream of a future.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Music, whether meaningful lyrics or a memorable tune, holds the power to connect us with the past and inspire us to think of the future. Our guests today embody both ideas. Later, we'll visit a classroom where music helps students learn math concepts, which sets them up for success in the coming school year. Joining us in the studio now is Scott Patterson, pianist, composer, lyricist, and librettist. This spring, he was awarded a 2019 Baker Artist Award, specifically the Mary Sawyer's M. Bowden $40,000 stipend. You can see him tonight at the Peel Center for Baltimore History and Architecture, where he'll perform his contemporary compositions on an 1879 Knobby Square Grand Piano. Welcome to On the Record, Scott.
Thank you for having me.
The Pittsburgh Tribune Review calls your music, quote, a blend of classical, soul, and rock music that is futuristic, emotive, and luxuriant, close quote. Tell me more. Describe your music.
We at Afro House like to think of the music as 25th century music.
25th century.
Yes, 25th century music.
You're not leaping ahead just a century. You're leaping several centuries. Describe what that means.
For us, we're very much inspired by the future and the art that we create, the music, the opera, the dance, everything that we do, we're always trying to use our imaginations. Imagine, what are people going to be doing 300 years from now? What is life going to be like? What are we doing today as we live today that's going to affect 100 years into the future? So our eyes are always on 100 years, 200 years, 300 years.
Okay, your eyes are focused forward. Where does your interest in music come from?
Before I was born, my mother made a decision that I was going to be a pianist.
Before you were born?
Before I was born, she made the decision.
Why?
And to this day, I do not know. But it's what I know. I began lessons at 5 years old. I played in church. My father is a jazz plays bass, upright bass, and I played with him. I took lessons. I played everywhere I could, and my whole life has been piano.
So you never had this urge just because your mother had decreed this that you were going to do something different. You wanted to do this.
I've always loved doing this, and that's. That's what my life has been. My life has been music. It's been piano.
You are the co-founder and artistic director of Afro House. What is that?
Afro House is a music-driven performance art house. It was created by myself and my wife in 2012. And we've been Afro House ever since. Afro House is a company where we create, we make things, we make art. We create dance, we create opera, we create jazz, we create whatever we can get our hands on, we create things.
And you're working on an opera now.
We are. We're working on an opera ballet, an Afrofuturistic sci-fi opera ballet.
What on earth does that mean?
Oh, a lot of things. it takes place in the future. It's about a general who creates a second sun.
A second sun?
A second sun.
Solar. A star in the sky.
Star in the sky. And he creates the second sun. And, of course, this causes untold destruction throughout their solar system. And in the aftermath, he kills himself, and his daughters are left to deal with the aftermath of that. And the story is about their paths of how they do that.
Why this fascination with and focus on the future?
We believe that the way that people live their lives in this society is or a lot of people, is that we live by our day-to-day. And it is only a luxury to be able to think outside of your everyday life. We believe, and I personally believe, that it is not a luxury. It's not a right. It's a human need to be able to think outside of your day-to-day, to be able to think of the future. And that is why we focus so much. We want to inspire ourselves and inspire our community and our country and our world to dream and to dream of a future. That the lives that we live today affect 100 years from now, that we are conscious today of what's going to happen down the line. And that is the work that Afro House is into. That is why we're into the future. We have a program, our 100-year symposium, and we gather people from the community and from all kind of different professions, and we talk about what does the future look like 100 years into the future. What can we imagine through education, through agriculture, through you name it. That is, we feel very, very passionate and deeply about that. And so we're trying to bring the conversation to as many people as we can through our art, through just these kind of events and experiences, you know. And it's something that we believe goes across racial lines or economic divides. It affects everyone. We all get stuck into our daily lives, and we don't think outside of our boxes. We don't think outside of those lives that we live. And so the work that we do is about that. Let's imagine. Use your imagination. What does it look like outside of where you live? What is the future going to look like?
It takes a lot of stretching.
Yeah.
Mental stretching to think. To answer those questions.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it takes something that we kind of have as children that we lose sometimes as adults, that uninhibited imagining, you know, without someone telling you that you're not supposed to, or that that's crazy, or that's ridiculous.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with pianist and composer Scott Patterson about his performance tonight at the Peel Center. He'll be playing original compositions on an 1879 Knobby Square Grand Piano. Tell us about this very special piano. What does it look like?
When I saw the piano for the first time, I thought I was looking at a table. It's square. It looks like a really beautiful dining room table that has this beautiful wood paneling and wood carving. It's well made. It's really beautiful. But then all of a sudden you lift the top of this, what you think is a table, and there's a piano underneath it. It is the most oddest thing that I've ever seen, but yet so beautiful.
What's so odd about it? Aside from the fact that it seems to be a table, but once you've lifted it, what's odd about it?
So many things. You know, in a modern piano, as pianists, we're taught to sit in the middle of the piano. So we have a symmetry that's going
about on. About as many octaves on one side as on the other.
Yes. So when you sit at this piano, the whole board is all on the left side of the instrument, and the rest of the instrument is this wood. And so you're already disoriented just by sitting down.
What does it sound like?
It sounds almost like a modern piano. It has a different timbre. Because it was made in 1879, it will not have the right, it won't have the tuning that we're used to. So it sounds like a piano that is three pitches off, and it has this bell like quality to it almost.
Where does it come from? This Knabi.
It comes from here in Baltimore. It's a piano company here in Baltimore.
But how does it come to be at the Peel?
Well, it was at the BMI, Baltimore Museum of Industry. And they were in touch with Nancy Proctor, who's at the Peel, and they, you know, asked if the Peel would like to have this instrument. And Nancy called me, and I went over to the BMI, and I took a look at the piano, and I asked, what am I looking at? This is a very beautiful table. And all of a sudden, you know, there's this lid open, this keyboard, and it's amazing.
Playing the 1879 Knabi piano much different than playing a conventional piano?
For me, it is, yes.
In what way?
It's different in the way that what I'm expecting to sound, to come out of the keys, the notes that I'm expecting to hear are not what I'm hearing. So my eyes are no good. Usually, you know, I can look at a piano and I can know where I'm at, you know, but it's all by feeling and all by hearing now, because what you're expecting to see and hear do not match up.
Does it have a different number of keys?
Yes. It has less octaves than a normal modern piano.
What will your performance tonight entail? The Peel website describes it as an immersive experience.
Yeah, so in this piano concert, we're allowing people, we're going to let people come in and sit on the floor they like. They can relax. You can bring a blanket. You can bring a pillow and just relax. We will have chairs for those who do not want to sit on the floor, of course. But in this experience, I'm going to talk to the audience. We're going to use our imaginations, and I'm going to play these futuristic pieces on an 1879 piano.
1879, the birth year of this Knabi piano, also happens to be the time when the Peel Museum building was male and female colored school number one. Mm-hmm. In Baltimore.
Yes.
The marked the beginning of public secondary education for African Americans in Baltimore. Is that also a factor in making sense of the future and the past?
Absolutely. You know, Afro House and the Peel Center have a very beautiful relationship that we've been cultivating. And you know, maybe it's the rebels in us that we take the future into this place that has so much history and so much past in it, and we do it with joy. I think it's beautiful that this place that was a budding place for education and learning, and for African Americans in the past, can now be a center of imagination and thoughts of the future. I can't think of a better place to do it.
What do you hope then that the audience takes from this performance?
A sense of wonderment. An escape into their imaginations. Imagination and wonderment are things that I value very, very much. And I do my best to put into not only my music, but the work that we do at Afro House. And so with this experience, like with most of all of these experiences that we do, I hope that the audience takes away that that sense of joy of adventure and imagination.
I appreciate your talking to us about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Have fun tonight.
I will.
Scott Patterson is an award-winning pianist, composer, lyricist, and librettist. Tonight, at the Peale Center for Baltimore History and Architecture, 225 Holiday Street, he'll perform on an 1879 Kanabi Square grand piano. There's a champagne toast at 7 p.m., and the show begins at 8. Seating is bring your own pillow and first come, first served. We have a link to more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Now a short pause on the record. After the break, we'll visit a classroom where kids use music to learn math. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the power of music. With composer and pianist Scott Patterson, we talked about the connection between music, imagination, and an expansive view of the future. Now we look at how music helps young students connect with complex ideas in math. On the Record producer Melissa Gear visited a young audience's Summer Arts and Learning Academy classroom at Gardenville Elementary in Northeast Baltimore, where teachers and artists collaborate to infuse arts into academics.
When we find the sum we add, when we find the sum we add, when we find the sum we add.
The Summer Arts and Learning Academy is a five-week summer program for pre-K through fifth graders that intentionally puts the arts in every classroom. We put a professional artist and a teacher together in each classroom to teach arts-integrated math and arts-integrated literacy in the mornings, and then we provide opportunities in the afternoon for professional artists to teach students so that students have the opportunity to dive deeply into an art form in the afternoon.
Everyone say maraca.
Maraca.
And then, Jalen, you have what?
I'm Christina Burdan. I am the Education Director of Baltimore City Initiatives at Young Audiences, and my primary roles at the Summer Arts and Learning Academy are developing and facilitating professional development and also mapping out our literacy curriculum and supporting our math curriculum.
What are the main goals of the Summer Arts Learning Academy?
We are really focused on preventing the summer slide that happens for young people during the summer when they don't have these kinds of opportunities. But more importantly, we really are focused on seeing the whole child. So we focus a lot on climate and culture with our artists and our teachers so that students can really find joy in learning. We want to boost academic achievement, but we also want to provide opportunities for students to be able to express themselves in many different ways through many different art forms and really figure out who they are and where their talents are and what they love so that when they go back into the classroom in the fall, they really have a better understanding of how they learn, whether that's strictly academically or that they learn that they can figure things out better through the arts and they can take those strategies back with them in the classroom.
And is the Summer Academy used kind of as a sandbox for teachers to bring this into their classrooms during the regular school year?
Yes. In fact, we have received wonderful results from surveys that teachers have said this professional development is some of the best that they've ever had because they are able to actually every single day try something new in the classroom with a professional artist and figure out exactly what they're going to carry with them into the fall. And so in conversations with artists and teachers, we find that their relationships continue often throughout the school year and they still call upon each other. The teacher will reach out to the artist. I'm trying this again, but it's going this way and I need some support in this way. So it's a really valuable way to flex the muscles of the teachers to be able to learn an art form over the summer and then be excited to go back into their classroom and use that art form to teach as well.
Why arts? What does that do for students?
I would say the most significant thing that we see is engagement. When you walk into our sala classrooms, young people are engaged. And when visitors walk in, they always leave saying, wow, I cannot believe how engaged students were in the classroom, because it provides that additional vehicle, something different, a way for them to express themselves and express their understanding in a way that they might not be able to do during the school year. And keeping them engaged means that you're building community and you're having less of these challenges, whether they're behaviorally or whatnot, in the classroom.
How many students are there participating in? How many locations are there?
We have 2,300 plus students this summer at 8 different sites across the city.
And these are free?
Yes, 100% free for Title I students.
Tell me about the class this morning that with Dawn and Steve, the math and music. What are the concepts of that class? What's in play there?
Well, Dawn and Steve, they've been working together now for 3 years, and essentially they are bringing Steve's music into every bit of math and literacy that they can.
Boys and girls, today during the math challenge, we are going to do our music circle.
It's time for the math challenge song. Class, are you ready to say yes?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
One,
yes.
Two, three. It's the math challenge.
It's the math.
My name is Steve Cyphers. I'm a vocalist, percussionist, and drummer for the band Blue Miracle and many other bands, and I'm also a teaching artist for young audiences of Maryland.
I'm Dawn Johnson, and I am a teacher with the Summer Arts and Learning Academy, and I am working with first graders this summer.
How would you describe the way that you collaborate?
Well, we always start with the Common Core standards, and then we think of different songs that we can create for each skill. And then the students become familiar with the songs. We are introducing about 8 new songs for each subject, so 8 to 10 for math, 8 to 10 for reading.
Or they might come across a word that's hard for them, algorithm. So then we turn it into a song and sing it, or a rap, and next thing you know, they know that word very well, and they know what it means, and then we apply it directly in the lesson.
Algorithm.
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 Let's find the algorithm.
Let's find the algorithm.
Solve the problem.
Solve the problem.
Do some math.
Do some math.
Have some fun.
Have some fun.
When I first heard about this, thinking about how music is used to teach math, I was thinking of like how many notes and quarter notes and things like that, like for fractions. But you're talking about the physicality of music that helps things kind of sink in?
Yes. You know, of course we do both. And when you get with older children, you can get into the fractions and measures and counting and things like that. But other times it's just the, you know, the sheer excitement of using music to enhance the subject, whatever that is. The math challenge song doesn't particularly cover a method of math, but it gets them excited for the math lesson.
And the arts make it more tangible, it's more hands-on, it's more exciting and engaging, and that really helps them to learn and to understand the skills, and it makes it a lot more concrete, and they get to use their creativity and their imagination, which they really love to do, and that really broadens their horizons and their 21st century skills, because they're actively participating in a group situation and really drawing in on what the other kids know and what their knowledge is, and then being able to showcase that with the arts. It's a very beautiful thing.
So the
next one is 3 plus 8
is 11.
3 plus 8
is
11.
3 plus 8
is 11.
All right.
In this particular grade, and especially first grade, is when they're making the transition from counting up with their fingers or in their head or with manipulatives. they're making that transition to getting it on the spot from their head. So now, when you put that in a song form, and you put a beat to it, and they're forced to make it quick, then they're driven to come up with that answer quick and make that jump from counting up to knowing it on the spot. And that's a big motivator. You know, the music, oh, I want to get it next. You know, so that in that way, it helps a lot to make that jump.
Ready? 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 55, 60.
On the Record producer Melissa Gear visited a first grade class at the Young Audiences Summer Arts and Learning Academy at Gardenville Elementary. She spoke with Education Director Christina Berdan, teacher Dawn Johnson, and teaching artist Steve Seifer. We have more information about Young Audiences at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for being with us on the Record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.